Taking a look at aches and pains and sprains and strains now with Lori Tine-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. And before we even get going, we need to congratulate Bill Boisenault.
Is that what you gave him?
I did.
He is the recipient.
What a sort of sneak.
What a sneak. Recipient of the 2008 Helen Hislop Award for Outstanding Contributions to Professional Literature. You got your award last week
in San Antonio at a conference.
Yeah, yes. Fantastic. Yes. It's quite an honor. That's a national award. It's not a small thing. It's a very big award. And, you know, for the contribution to the professional literature, Bill has done so much for our profession in terms of moving it forward, particularly in the area of physical therapy diagnosis, relative to pathology, screening for disease processes. It's just, he's really been at the forefront of that literature, and he was finally rightfully acknowledged for it. So way to go, Bill.
How nice. Thank you. Thank you very much. Not my mom's going to expect a letter every week now, from you, and well written as well.
Well, I tell you what, I haven't given the number, but already people are online. I'll give that number now, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. If something you want to have our experts deal with, I hope you'll join in. And let's see here. Jamie in Green Bay is up first. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about hip snapping syndrome. I was diagnosed with that recently, went through physical therapy, and didn't really help it at all, and saw an orthopedic surgeon, and he said, well, there's really nothing they can do about it either. I was wondering if either of your guests has dealt with hip snapping syndrome or has any recommendations.
What is it?
that's a good question. There's many things around your hip that can snap. So the question is, where do you feel the snapping, and with what kind of movements and activities?
They're thinking the SI joints are what are snapping, and I feel it when I walk.
The SI joints, now that's a new one on me. I mean, typically you get snapping, there's a ligament in the front of the hip that sometimes snaps around some of the bony structures and the soft tissue structures in the front of the hip. And sometimes there's a thick band of tissue on the outside of your hip, and sometimes that snaps. And
my IT band on my left hip snaps also, but that doesn't bother me.
Right, exactly. So if someone referred to something as hip snapping syndrome, those would be the first two things that would come to mind, not your SI joint. Most of the time, I would think if your SI joint hip is snapping, it would be a sign of instability. Bill can jump in here anytime he wants to. There are a number of ways to treat SI joint instability. There are SI belts that they can use for providing some stability. I don't know if they tried that.
No.
And there are some exercises you can do to try to strengthen the muscles that provide stability. And from the medical perspective, that's one of the areas where prolotherapy has been shown to be effective and in reducing instability. So I'm going to let Bill chime in here.
Yeah, I would agree with Lori. I've also heard of the hip snapping syndrome, but never related to the sacroiliac joint. There are some joints around the sacroiliac joint, low lumbar spine, that can make noise. Just like many people, their kneecaps pop and crack when they squat down to the floor and get back up. But if it truly is your sacroiliac joint, then it usually implies that it is hypermobile or moves too much. And Lori's right. Trying a sacroiliac joint belt would be in part diagnostic. You know, is this really where the snapping is coming from? And then from a treatment standpoint, if that does help, but it doesn't cure it for you, then potentially prolotherapy would be something to consider.
What kind of therapy is that? Can you spell that, please?
It's prolo, P-R-O-L-O, therapy. It's an injection.
Okay.
And it's an injection to promote laying down more collagen, scarring to tighten up an area, basically. But I wouldn't try that unless you try a stabilization belt first for the sacroiliac joint, and see what kind of relief, if any, you get with that.
Would I obtain one of those through a physical therapist or?
Yes, you can. Physical therapists, that's probably tied in with prosthetics, orthotics company. But even if if the sacroiliac joint is the source of this, hip flexibility is critical to take pressure off the SI joint, and then trunk stabilization on top of it is what should give you the best long-term results. So I'm not sure all the things that the physical therapist may have tried with you before, but that should be the primary approach.
Mm-hmm. Super. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Leroy in Mineral Point, you're up next. Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Question. My wife is going to have back surgery, and there's stenosis involved along with a cyst going through into one of the vertebrae. And I was wondering what kind of what the results of the surgery can she hope for? Her left leg is severely involved right now and hurting and not much motion.
Okay.
Do you know if she's going to have a decompression or a fusion?
Laparotomy.
Okay.
That answers the question.
Okay. The primary stenosis means narrowing. There's only a certain amount of space for the spinal cord and nerves in the middle of our spine, and then as those nerves exit out to the side into our arms and legs. And there's a variety of things that can narrow the window or narrow that space and cause nerve compression and can cause horrendous pain and also some weakness and some numbness.
Yeah.
So if I understand the type of procedure that she's scheduled to have, it's designed to open the window, make the windows wider so there's more space for the nerves and take the pressure off the nerves. And so the long-term effect would be less leg pain and getting strength back in the legs and sensation as well. But it depends on how irritated the nerves are going into the surgery. It may take quite a while, and other people get relief pretty quickly. But
okay.
that's the hope. It's really designed to get rid of the leg symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Someone else who seemed to be in a lot of pain this weekend as I watched a little of the U.S. Open was Tiger Woods.
Yes.
With his knee. And, he had a couple of months off. The man is, followed the strengthening and whatever recovery exercises that he had to do. And still, after all that time, still in pain. Seemed like a long time for somebody in his physical condition.
Well, his condition is not stenosis for one. He's got a local knee problem, and that's where he had the scope. And I know the commentators showed him slow motion with his swing, and you could see him grimacing at times. And many people do recover, but most people are not stressing the knee the way he stresses his knee. And that's one of the differences.
Anytime you torque around the knee, I mean, golf involves a lot of rotation. It's not like running where it's mostly straight ahead and fairly predictable, but they're rotating a lot on that knee, and they require stability at the joint because that's where the force is generated from, up through the ground, through the knees, through the hips, into the arms for the swing. But at the same time, they need the mobility to rotate. So it's actually a very fine-tuned activity. And also, anytime you have surgery on the knee, even if it's not a strong or significant, like an ACL reconstruction, it changes the proprioception and just how you feel around the joint. And so a subtle change in a game as precise as golf can have a big impact on them.
Yeah, and Lori has mentioned it to a number of callers over the years. If they're just going in to clean a little cartilage or shave a little piece off the meniscus, that's one thing. But if there's also some degenerative changes, osteoarthritis in that joint, and I don't know that's the case.
Right.
But, if there's other structural changes at that joint, then they will not recover quite as quickly either.
Well, the amount of torque he would put on his left knee would be...
It's tremendous.
160 mile an hour swing or something like that. It's unbelievable. Well, away from Tiger and on to Deborah in Neillsville. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I'm just calling to tell you thank you.
Oh.
I have spent so much money going to podiatrists because I had plantar fasciitis so bad. Mm-hmm. And just from listening to your show, I bought that goofy-looking night splint.
Yeah, it is pretty imposing, isn't
it? Yes, it is. My husband says I look like Frankenstein. But it does work.
Oh, great.
So I think if anybody has plantar fasciitis, that is the best $50 I ever spent. And I spent so much other money going to the podiatrist, even getting a cortisone shot, which did not even help. And it's just the best thing. And, I mean, I was unable to walk on one of my legs, and I need to walk because I have discs in my, I'm of the age everything's degenerating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have lower discs, and I have really bad neck degeneration. So I need to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't walk,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's very detrimental.
Deborah, can I ask you how long you had to wear it before you started getting relief?
I did wear it. In fact, actually, when I ordered it, the girl said, I said, how long will it take? And she said 2 to 3 months. And it was about 2 months. I still do have, if I wear flip-flops, which I know you're not mm-hmm. supposed to wear, because I do have orthotics that I wear all day long in my tennis shoes. But if I walk or do something wrong, and I still have the problem, so then I wear my night splint,
mm-hmm.
and that helps correct it. But, yes, it does. That's the thing. You do have to wear it, 2, 3, 4 months, and then you just still have to wear it periodically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you do have to keep that in mind. I mean, it's not,
Still.
Well, good for you for being persistent and, also doing some calf stretching. And Lori's also mm-hmm. described a way to kind of massage or stretch out the bottom of the foot to just try to increase the length of the tissue. So hopefully you need that boot less and less and less over time.
Right, right. That's go ahead, Deborah.
You stand on the steps and stretch it?
Well, actually the research has shown that that's helpful, but for the long term, the best stretching is if you take that foot and you cross that ankle over your opposite knee and then grasp your toes and pull your toes back up towards your calf.
Okay.
That's called plantar fascia specific stretching, and that's been showed to have better results than just the weight-bearing stretch.
Okay.
And then another just thing to pass along, I have spent so much money going to see doctors, and I've begun to think they don't know as much as public radio. Anyway, and
can we quote you on that?
Anyway, another thing, and here I heard this on Oprah from Dr. Oz, and I don't listen to everything, but one thing, because of my neck and my back, one thing that he did say, and I've been doing it, and it's like the easiest thing to do, and here again, you have to be persistent at doing it, but if you bend over and touch your arches really slowly and come back up with your arms and your back and pulling and coming up very slowly with your neck and your arms in the back and stretching, it is one of the best exercises to relieve back and neck pain. Hmm. And if you just do that periodically through the day, it relieves so much stress. And I'm a potter, so I bend over a lot.
Oh. Well, some good points there. What does the night splint actually accomplish? What does it do when you put a night splint on?
It holds the foot up in a flexed position. When you sleep at night, your toes tend to point down.
Yes.
And so that shortens the plantar fascia on the bottom of your foot. Then when you step up in the morning, that tissue's been shortened all night, and you give it that abrupt stretch, it really doesn't like it. So all it does is it holds it up and gives it a prolonged, continuous stretch. I think Deborah said something that was a theme that kept coming through that I really liked, and that was persistence. One of the things that people have trouble with is that they don't get immediate results. They don't get them fast enough. And so they say, well, this isn't working. And I think particularly in chronic problems like chronic neck pain, chronic back pain, chronic foot pain, you really have to be persistent.
Yeah. We all want a quick fix. That's right. Just human nature. But a lot of these conditions that people call in with, they didn't happen overnight. They've been building up over months or sometimes years. And so there really isn't a quick fix in most cases.
I thank you very much, Deborah, for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne, Brody, and Bill Boisenault, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne, Brody, our guests today as we talk about those aches and pains that we all suffer from time to time. And when you call in at that 800-642-1234 number or the Madison number, 263-1890, the melodious voice you hear on the other end of the phone belongs to Jim Packard, our producer. Thanks to Jim again. And Linda in Bailey's Harbor is up next. Linda, hello to you.
Hi. On Saturday, my husband and I did a 100K bike ride. And Sunday morning, he woke up with pain between his shoulder blades. And it intensifies a little bit when he breathes. So any tips on what he can do?
Did you do the horrible hilly 100?
Well, we did the Ridges Ride for Nature in Door County. So it wasn't hilly, but it was windy. So a lot of the uphills, gradual uphills against the wind were pretty tough.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah. I know that shoulder blade pain.
Yeah,
because I've had the same thing. What do I suggest for right now? Some stretching.
Uh-huh.
Those muscles. So if he could grasp the underside of a chair with his hand and then lean his head and neck and his body the other direction.
Okay.
That's one thing. Bringing his arm across in front of his chest and pulling his elbow towards his chest. Bringing his chin down to his chest and stretching his chin down to his chest. Those are all going to be things to help stretch out that area. If it's not getting better over the next 4 days or so, then he could think about seeing somebody. I mean, the outside possibility is that he's got a disc problem there, and that can refer pain to your shoulder blades. But, you know, that's a less likely problem. It's more likely that he just has a lot of muscle tension pain from the ride. You could also do a little massage in the area, and that'd probably make it feel better, too. Although sometimes they never get better. Oh, that hurts. Can you do a little bit more of that massage?
Yeah. Well, what about ice or heat on that area?
Whatever feels comfortable to him.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, acutely, we like to use ice, but in that area, people often like the warmth from a hot pack or something. So if that makes him feel better and relax and make it easier to stretch, that would be fine too.
Okay.
And then if this turns out to be some kind of a persistent problem every time he gets on his bike, then you have to look at his posture on his bike, how much weight's on his hands, how much weight's back posteriorly on his seat and feet, had his head and neck posture when he's on his bike and so on.
Okay.
Yeah. Is he on a road bike?
A road bike, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably leaning over, hunched over a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Linda, one way that your husband can try to massage that area himself between the shoulder blades, not for his neck, but between the shoulder blades, if you have a tennis ball or a racquetball laying around the house, he can stand with his back against a wall or a door and put the tennis ball between the wall and his back.
Okay.
And he can just kind of roll up and down on that ball. And you want to stay off the spine itself, but just off to either side. And you can cover 4 or 5 inches, then move the ball down a little bit. Can be a good way to just gently work those muscles out.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And I didn't ask. I should have asked how she avoided it. It's a different kind of bike, maybe. Different posture. Rick and Serona, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning, Larry. You know, about a month ago, I pulled my back by lifting something that was probably a little too heavy for me. And I didn't get to my chiropractor for about 3 days. And when I got there, I was in really bad pain, having a hard time walking and lifting my foot and that sort of thing. And his adjustments helped me a lot and gave me mobility. I think it was the fifth lumbar. He said that it was a bit inflamed. And since that time, the pain has spread from my back, which I no longer have pain in, down to my thigh. And that was pretty bad for about 2 or 3 days. Then to my calf, and that was bad for about 2 or 3 days. And then now my foot is partially feeling numb and tingly.
Mm.
So that's what happened to me. I'm wondering if you have any insights into any of that.
Yeah, that generally is a pattern of worsening. We use the arm and leg as a barometer or a thermometer of how the back is doing and how the neck is doing. The further down the leg the symptoms go, then generally means the worse inflamed things are up in the spine. And especially when you start getting some numbness, there's definitely some nerve involvement as well. And you know, if you haven't, what I would do at this point is to see a medical doctor, physician, and they may want to do some diagnostic tests, but they definitely want to make sure that pressure on the nerve is not to the point where you cannot get return. So you want to monitor this very, very closely. Once the pain gets below the knee and you start getting neurological symptoms, you really have to monitor it very, very closely.
Oh, really? So chiropractic adjustments won't work on this type of thing?
I can't say it won't work, but the pattern you're describing to me is a pattern of worsening.
Okay.
And generally, if adjustments are going to work, you're going to see good changes, improvement within a couple of weeks. And so you're a month out.
Yeah.
And I know in our practice at the Spine PT Clinic, we also do manipulation, and we use it within the first couple of weeks to kind of get things jump-started, and then we start adding other types of interventions. So it's definitely a time to try something different. But having said that, I would still see your medical doctor, your physician, and have monitor that foot very closely.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Rick. Matt in Hatfield is up next. Hi, Matt.
Good morning, Larry and guests. How are you?
Great.
Good. I think I might just be getting old. I'm 47, but in the last 3-4 months, I've been very achy and stiff joints, especially the hands, knees, kind of a thing. And I'm wondering, I'm out in the middle of the woods, and about a year ago, I had a tick bite. And, you know, with the bullseye thing, and I'm wondering if this might be a symptom of Lyme's.
It could very well be. I mean, that's a fairly classic. I mean, when you started describing your symptoms and your age, the first thing that popped into my head was rheumatoid arthritis. It sounded like a systemic something that was affecting your joints, and probably second on that list would be Lyme's. So I would go in and I would have that checked immediately.
Okay, I'll do that. And Larry, I love your show. It's such a nice break from all the heavy duty politics. So thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks a lot for calling. And get into the doctor. Get that looked at.
Yep. Yep.
Let's see. Cindy in Wisconsin Rapids, I think, is up next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling actually for my husband. My husband is 62 and is very, very, very athletic. But in January, while cross country skiing, he slipped big time on the ice and probably pulled a groin muscle. He iced and seemed to get a little better. Then a few weeks later, he shoveled some snow. And after that, about every time he does something, it gets worse. From being able to, for example, he could bike, you know, 100 miles a day. Normally now, if he bikes 10 miles a day, he's really hurting the next day. And one of the things that the doctor said, he did see an orthopedic doctor in early February, was that it probably was a pulled groin muscle, but it could also be a sports hernia. So since then, he's probably seen 6 doctors, had an MRI, a CAT scan, something to see if maybe something was wrong with his tummy, and nothing gets revealed on these images, yet he still incurs pain so that he really can't do anything the next day in his lower groin area.
Hmm.
Has he seen a physical therapist along the way, Cindy?
No, he has not. He's seen a doctor that in his initial training was in physical therapy, and now he's a sports orthopedic doctor.
Okay.
And I guess, you know, our question is, does it seem like this is really still a pulled or torn groin muscle, or does it sound more like a sports hernia? And so many doctors don't seem to even know what a sports hernia is.
Right, right. Well, the MRI and CT scan would have ruled out most major structural problems. And I'm assuming they did those tests in the area of the hip, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So in terms of local, and, you know, those tests don't catch everything, but they catch most major things, major tears and fractures and things like that. And the fact that they have considered the sports hernia, I'm assuming they've done the appropriate testing to rule that out as well.
I'm not so sure. I mean, actually, one of his doctors thought that maybe it was a sports hernia, and now he's sending him to another sports health doctor to find out if maybe that is the case. But it seems like this is such a very difficult thing to detect, the sports hernia.
Right. Mm-hmm. It can be. Yes, it can be. Well, here's one recommendation. I mean, pursue whatever you're doing with the physician or going to see a subspecialist in this area. But even a visit to a physical therapist at this stage wouldn't hurt. You know, if your husband had not seen a physician along the way, I'd probably say go to a physician first. But with all the tests that have been done, it may be that the physical therapist can, one, shed some light on the source of the symptoms and a potential treatment plan to get him back as physically active as he would like to be. Even a visit or two should be enough for that therapist to be able to shed some light and be able to provide an opinion whether PT can help or not. I know a physical therapist in the Wisconsin Rapids area. If you're willing to leave your contact information with maybe Jim Packard after the call, I'd be happy to get back to you later on today or tomorrow.
Oh, that would be wonderful. You know, one of the things that he's not real sure of is, should he actually try to kind of work through the pain?
That's a really good question, and that's something the physical therapist can help you with.
Oh, okay.
The kind of physical examination that a physical therapist does is a little bit different, where they really try to do a differential and find if it's musculotendinous, find the source of that. And in combination with all the other examination results that he's had from the different physicians and the MRI and the CT, and then maybe trying different kinds of exercises may help to shed some diagnostic light on it. But it can also help him figure out what he can do and what he can do safely and kind of guide him through that return to activity process.
Okay.
Good luck.
Sure, I'll stay on the line.
Okay, and we'll put you on hold. And thanks very much for calling. And Jim Packard will check up with you, Cindy, there. Susan in Wausau is up next. Let's go to Susan. Hi, Susan.
Hi there. I was calling up for one thing, but then I heard the lady talking about the night splint. And the person who answered the phone said, I could ask you about that, an order on that, just looking up night splint, or what can you tell me about that for my father-in-law?
You can Google night splint,
okay,
and you'll find all different versions of it. And I probably looked through some of the different products available. They're in a different price range, and depending upon his comfort level, there's, you know, some that come up higher, some that are a lower profile, different comfort levels, so you can take a look at what's out there. Basically can fall into two categories. One's a posterior that goes on the back of the calf, and it's kind of like the back half of a boot.
Okay.
The other is an anterior splint that's actually the kind that I use. And that's a much lower profile. It doesn't have as many straps, this and that, and things trying to hold the ankle down into the brace. So I find the anterior one to be more comfortable, and I've tried a bunch of different ones. So you can just take a look and see what you think might be most comfortable for him.
Okay. Thank you. And my question was in regards to, we've started using our old mountain bikes, and I found that my hand was really tingling after riding it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if it was connected to riding the bike, and we just had a new stem and handlebar put on it that would make it so we wouldn't be bending over so much like
okay.
the bikes were 10 years ago.
Okay, yep. Yep.
But that my husband said when we went out and tried them, he said, well, you know, there's still a lot of pressure on our hands
mm-hmm.
going down there. He said his actually felt like he had a little bit of aggravation for a tennis elbow.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of gardening work too, but I do think it might be tied to the bike, and I just thought I'll ask you about that.
Yeah, it could very well be. That's a fairly common symptom following biking. So what you may want to do is take your bike in and have the people in the bike shop look at you on your bike and look at your posture and see if, again, there's different ways that your stem can be angled to shift your body weight.
Okay.
And you know, as the worst thing would be that they say your frame is too big and there's only so many modifications we can make. But just trying different setups of your stem and handlebars, seat position and height and so on to get the right mix for you to make sure that you're weight-bearing correctly. And then using a padded glove, obviously, is another easy thing to do. And then when you're holding onto your bike, just kind of being aware of your wrist posture and how much extension or how far your hand is back and how much weight bearing you're doing on your wrist. And if there's any way you can straighten your wrist a little bit so you don't have such a strong angle at your wrist.
Okay.
Those things might help.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Laura and Stevens Point's up next. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I had a quick question about lower back pain. I've been experiencing back problems since I was a teenager. Started out with simply if I sat too long, my whole left leg would go numb. And as time has gone on, I also get pain down my leg. And I also, because of my job, I get a lot of lower back pain. And I've been to two physical therapists and two orthopedic doctors, and they always tell me that it's just weak back muscles because I'm not really having any severe nerve damage. I can sense things. I have good reflexes. But the question I have is, would a chiropractor be a good idea to look into? I have friends who are chiropractors, and they tell me that doing physical therapy won't help me, and they keep recommending going to a chiropractor.
Yeah, I think the chiropractors help lots of people with low back pain and neck pain, depending on what the underlying cause of the pain is.
Okay.
And I think the research shows that people with chronic back pain, if you tie in leg pain along with it, do best with a combination of manual therapy techniques, which can include a chiropractic adjustment, along with exercise, along with education. The exercises should include some core strengthening or stabilization. You want good flexibility through the hips and legs to help keep pressure off your back. And then education from the standpoint of, one, how to exercise, but also related to your job and how you sleep, again, to minimize the pressure on your back.
Okay.
So, you know, and generally the manual therapy part should happen fairly early on in the course of treatment. The manual therapy component is designed to speed up the process of recovery and speed up the process of your tolerant exercise program more quickly and more aggressively. So, you know, whoever you go to, that's based on the research currently, people with chronic back pain, it should be a combination of those things that are provided.
Okay. Yeah, I've been told to do different sets of lunges to strengthen mainly my hips, because I was told my hips, which are, I guess, are part of the core, are weak, and that may be contributing to the fact that my back is in pain, because I don't have strength in my back or in my hips.
Yeah.
I have strength in my stomach. I was told I have very good strength there, and people have that misconception that stomach is the most important, and one orthopedic doctor told me that your back is two-thirds your core.
Right.
And so is your hips, and or your hips are a major component, and if you don't have strong hips and back, then having a strong stomach won't help me.
Right. You know, good places to help strengthen the core is in the pool. Again, especially if pain is a significant issue, you get the unweighting of the water. And there's other things that we use a lot. We use exercise balls. We use foam rollers as a way to help strengthen the core, which includes your hip area as well. But again, the program should be tied specifically to your daily activities, what your job requires, and things you like to do for leisure as well.
I do a lot of bending and hiking on uneven ground.
Yeah. Yeah, so balance is important for you, proprioception is important for you, and in terms of bending, you want really good flexibility through the hips and the back of your legs, because if you're tight back there, then every time you do bend, more pressure goes right across your waist in the area where it sounds like at least some of your pain is coming from.
Yeah, I don't have very good flexibility. I've never been very flexible. Yeah.
So that might be one avenue to pursue. And also, just a comment about your abdominal strength. You know, Bill's right and you're right that you need to have balance. You need to have strength on both sides of the spine, front and back. But even having strong abdominal muscles doesn't matter if you don't recruit them at the right time when you're functioning. So just because you have good strong muscles doesn't mean you're using them in the right way at the right time.
Oh, should I be engaging them when I'm bending or when I'm lifting things, or
yes.
maybe I'm not? Maybe
yes,
I'm
ma'am.
Using only my back.
Yes, ma'am. That's, right. They support your back. So one of the first things you do is you tighten those stomach muscles to support and brace your back before you lift anything.
All
absolutely.
Right.
And finally, how do I find a good chiropractor? Because I haven't. Family members have always told me horror stories of things that have happened to people they know. While going to chiropractors, which is the best way to get someone that you know will do more good than will help me, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's because I'm not a chiropractor. I'm not a part of their association.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure the Wisconsin Chiropractic Association has a website you could potentially go to, and you know, you can always call an office and see what is their approach to back pain, and if it's adjustments only, you know, at this stage, I'm not telling you not to try it, but I wouldn't try it for very long if it's not helping. But I don't know. If you're, you know, physical therapist, yes, I could help you there, but I don't know about the chiropractic profession.
Yeah, I've had physical therapists I've seen say a chiropractor probably wouldn't help me because they feel it's more related to muscles, not the spine itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I have one physical therapist who are telling me one thing, and then I have friends who are chiropractors telling me another. So that's...
Yeah.
Well, I guess it comes down to what makes you feel good, huh?
Well, it's finding the right combination at the right time, which when you're the consumer and you're the one in pain, it makes it very difficult and can be very frustrating because there are lots of different approaches out there for chronic back pain. And at this point in time, there doesn't seem to be one perfect answer for everybody.
That's true.
Yeah, but one of the important things you said was, you know, it makes whatever makes you feel good. There may be some interventions, such as a chiropractic manipulation, that give you short-term relief, where you feel better for the rest of that day for a couple hours afterwards, and that's wonderful, but you can't do that the rest of your life. That's why, as Bill said, it has to be combined with the other stuff. The manipulation, if it helps decrease your pain, can give you a window where you can start doing the strengthening, which is what will give you the long-term relief.
Yeah, that's what I want, because everyone I've ever talked to who's gone to chiropractic seems like they go forever. They've been going for years and years and years and haven't found any other way to relieve their pain.
Yeah.
And I want something that's not going to, something that I'm not going to be dependent on.
So think combination.
Right. Right. And there should be a lot of education to empower you to take care of your back when you have a flare-up and also when things are going well.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it. Lori Tyne-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. One of our guests, the other Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, we hope you'll join in as we visit with Lori Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisenault. Larry Mueller here. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And you can email us, too, at talk@wpr.org. And Ken in Muskego is up next. So let's go to Ken. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
About a year and a half ago, I ended up tearing my ACL, my MCL, my meniscus, and breaking my fibula.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was a good one. After 6 weeks, the meniscus and the MCL were healed well enough that they could do the surgery. I got the cadaver ligament. I forget what that's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the physical therapy. I'm very happy with the results. I have full strength back and everything. The two things that I do have a question on. One, I lost about 5 degrees in both flex and bend.
Uh-huh.
Is that something I can ever expect to get back? Or has it been to a point now where if I don't have it by now, it won't be back?
Yeah, it's probably not going to come back at this point.
Okay. And how about like when I go to kick a ball and that kind of gives that twinge back through the knee, you know, is that there too? Anytime I straighten a leg out quickly, it you know, I know it.
Yeah, I would say probably.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things you might think about is trying to train up to things mm-hmm. like kicking a ball, where you start at slower speeds and gradually work your way up and see if you can find a motor program
okay.
in your head that minimizes that that twinge, if you can figure out the source of the twinge.
Sure.
If it's deep in your knee joint, it may be that you have to limit your range of motion a little bit. But there may be somewhere a combination of muscle activation patterns where you don't get that twinge.
Okay.
But it takes a little bit of work on your part to figure out what that is.
Right. The other question I have is, I've been, since the accident, I've been doing a lot of cardio. I've lost a good chunk of weight and just really doing a lot of working out. And I've noticed that that leg from the incident, my calf is considerably smaller than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of biking. Is there any way, I mean, can I like wear an ankle weight to work that leg more than the other?
Nah.
You know, try to get that back? Or do I just have to specifically work that leg while I'm not doing something with the other?
You may or may not get that back.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit about the accident.
Ice racing motorcycles.
Ice racing
motorcycles.
Okay.
Yeah, the leg went between a tire and a part of the frame of the motorcycle, and it pushed it down, and that's what popped everything.
Okay, yeah. I would say at this point, I mean, you can try to work it independently mm-hmm. of the other one. If you're looking for muscle bulk, then you're really talking about high resistance, low repetition.
Okay.
But you, as you think about that, and as I process that in my head right now, I think about it's hard to load your calf muscle that way without concurrently loading your knee.
Right.
And if you've had a meniscus, ACL, MCL, and the whole shoot and match, I'm not sure you want to load your joint that much.
Right.
So you can try, I'm just thinking you could try like a knee flexed. You're laying on your stomach and you have weight on the ball of your foot and you point your toe up to the ceiling, work your soleus a little bit. It's not going to cross your knee joint. So you may be able to get a little bit of bulk that way.
Okay.
You know, some single leg on your toe kind of a thing. But I wouldn't put a lot of weight on my shoulders or anything like that to lift in a toe raise fashion because it could really overload your joint. So it may be that way. It may always be smaller.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Joseph and Nina, your turn now. Hi, Joseph.
Good morning. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I'm calling on behalf of my wife. She has a back condition, a lower back condition, which prevents her from walking more than 3 blocks at a time before she has to sit down. Now, she's been very good about her treatment. She's gone to the right doctor. She's exercised faithfully. She's had cortisone treatment. A few days ago, she was to her neurologist for some other condition, and she told her neurologist about not being able to walk more than three blocks. And the neurologist said, well, with all the care you've had, you should be doing better than that. And she sent her for another MRI. And I guess I'm concerned about this, and I think I'd want to get a fresh set of eyes and hands for my wife. And I was wondering if you can recommend some top-notch outfit to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure we can help with that, Joseph. And again, maybe after we're done with the call, if you want to leave your contact information with Jim Packer, the producer, you know, phone number or email address, and we can contact you. Yeah, 3 blocks after all this time is not very far. Now, you mentioned back, is she having any leg symptoms at all?
I don't believe so.
So no numbness or weakness?
I believe she might have had those at one time, but she hasn't complained to me about that.
Okay. All right.
As I say, my wife is a very disciplined person, and she's been faithful to her exercises, which she's using to help support her back muscles.
Mm-hmm.
But even with all that, I mean, we were on vacation recently, and she could manage 3 blocks, and then she had to sit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, in
okay.
the past, I've heard when she was first diagnosed, I heard the word spinal stenosis used.
Right, right.
I haven't since, but I just don't know. I'm at my wit's end with this.
Well, I'm sure both of you are. You know, the stenosis, again, we had a caller earlier, it just means a narrowing and implies pressure on nerves. But classically, it's not back pain associated with it. It's leg symptoms, really bad leg pain or numbness and weakness in the legs that causes stenosis, or that is a result of the stenosis. That they would see on the MRI.
They would see that? How,
yes.
How sure are you of that? Is there a chance they'll miss it?
Well, the chances, yes, but it's very slight. It is probably the gold standard for stenosis is an MRI. So it's
and what would they look? What would a doctor look for viewing an MRI with reference to stenosis?
Well, they would look for narrowing. There are certain spaces or openings in the spine, and you with the MRI and CAT scan as well, you can see the integrity of those openings and how much space is there for nerves, and the spinal cord as well. So that's the advantage of an MRI. You don't get those pictures with an X-ray. So it's as close to a gold standard diagnostic tool as you can get for stenosis.
And if it is stenosis, what are her possibilities?
Well, conservative care first, and it sounds like she has gotten a lot of that.
Yes.
The physical therapy, which can include a variety of treatment approaches. And there's times they do injection, cortisone injections, to decrease inflammation of nerves. And then that tied with rehabilitation can be a good combination for folks.
She's had that. She's had the cortisone. It helped her for a while, but not very long.
Right. And then also this, some of the folks who have stenosis end up having surgery, a decompressive surgery that opens up the space for those nerves.
And how successful is that?
It can be very successful, but it in part depends on how many levels of the spine are involved. If it's just one level, success can be very, very good. But if it's two or three levels, then the prognosis isn't as good.
Can you explain to me two or three levels of what, please?
Sure. The most common parts of the spine for this to occur is the L5, S1 level, the bottom two vertebrae of the spine, and then the two right above that, L4 and L5, is where most of this narrowing occurs. And then there's L3-4 and L2-3 on up the spine. The more levels that you have narrowing, then the prognosis, it decreases the chance for a really good outcome related to surgery, as well as other forms of care as well.
Are there serious risks with decompressive surgery?
There are risks with any kind of invasive procedure. But, you know, again, it's a surgery that's been around for a long, long time. And if you go to a spine surgeon, and this is what he or she does for a living, the risks are minor. But then that's also what a surgeon can tell you. If you go in for a surgical consult, you know, they can tell you what they feel the prognosis will be and what the risks will be based on your wife's presentation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think she's ready for to talk with the surgeon about this?
It sounds like a surgical consult is probably in order based on the things that you've described.
And good luck. And we'll put you on hold, and Jim can get your information, and we'll get back to Joseph. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck. And Bruce in Dodgeville is up next, so let's go to Bruce. Hi, Bruce.
Morning. Say, a couple of years ago, back in 2005, I had a construction accident, and it severed some disc. I wiped out all my stilts. Anyway, they redid a fusion, let's see here, C, 3, 4, and 5. About 6 months later, they redid the surgery. And ever since then, my legs are going out. My left leg goes out pretty consistent. And they say it's nerve damage, I guess, but my balance gets bad about every 2 weeks. I get where doors start tripping me up.
Yeah.
And I get two things happen. I get a solid ringing in my ears with crickets, really really obnoxious where you can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get a sharp pain in my left eye. These two things will occur, and then I know that my balance is bad, and I really got to watch what I'm doing.
Yeah.
When I had the second surgery, they thought some of the stuff would go away, but none of it has. It's been about 7 months now since surgery, and I feel like I'm kind of dangerous to myself sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know my own balances.
Yeah, especially if you're just stepping over a doorstep can trip you up. So your medical doctor and surgeon is aware of all these symptoms you just described?
Yeah, I go to a physiatrist and then obviously my neurosurgeon. But I've been trying to get back to work, and it's not every time I do, I re-injure myself.
Yeah.
Right.
I've been off a couple of years now, but I mean, I go back, and the last time I went back, they I only worked 4 days.
Okay.
And they thought I had bulged a disc below the surgery site.
Right, right. Have you seen a physical therapist along the way, Bruce?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay, and have they worked on balance activities for you?
Yeah, they did. Taught me to step into doors, step into a refrigerator. Anytime I stretch my right arm, mm-hmm. it just almost immediately aggravates it. So I've learned to do that. I've learned to do, I call it the elephant exercise, where you get down on the ground
yeah.
and stretch out. The thing is, I haven't found anything to slow it down. It started, this last episode started last Sunday, and it's 8 days now, and my balance is just as bad as it was last Sunday when I noticed. I mean, I noticed it right away. I start hitting my head.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, a couple things. It sounds like they've worked on some flexibility and doing some strengthening with you. It sounds like balance is a major issue. There are balance centers where physical therapists may have little different backgrounds or specialty areas than the folks that you have seen. There's special equipment related to balance that may be a benefit for you, both from a diagnostic standpoint but also a treatment standpoint. So if you have not been to maybe a formal balance center, that's what I would recommend at this stage based on what you've described.
And are there some in Madison or the area?
There are. There are a couple in Madison. And again, if Bruce would like to leave his contact information, I can be glad to contact him.
All right. We can do that as well. Thank you very much for calling, Bruce, and we'll put you on hold. Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault are guests here on the Ideas Network. We're dealing with aches and pains and sprains and strains on the Ideas Network right now. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tynebrony, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. And they come by about once a month to deal with all kinds of pains here. And John in South Milwaukee has one, so let's go to John. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a shoulder that's been bothering me for about a month now. I have a neighbor who's a chiropractic person. She says it could be a rotator cuff or a bursitis, and I'm just trying to get a handle on what it is and how I can take care of it.
Do you know how it started?
Not really. I don't remember like there being a trauma or anything. I just know it woke up, it was sore,
And
it's sort of built.
Is it your dominant shoulder?
Yeah, right shoulder, yeah.
Okay. And what kind of movements or activities bothers it?
Laying on it will hurt.
Okay.
So I don't lay on the side of my sleep anymore. Sometimes, like in the morning and stuff, it'll be hard to lift it.
Okay.
You know, I'll give it a little, then it loosens up and I'm all, I'm mobile after that. And after work, it's sore, so I ice it. If I ice it, the following day, it definitely feels a lot better. If I don't ice it, I notice.
Okay, and what kind of work do you do?
I'm a package handler.
So you're lifting?
I'm lifting, yes.
Overhead?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. yeah, that'll do it. Repetitive overhead lifting is really hard on your rotator cuff.
Okay.
And it could be a combination of rotator cuff and bursitis because in your shoulder, there's only a very small space between the head of the humerus, the round ball and the ball and socket, and then your clavicle, your collarbone comes up on top of it. And there's a very small space in there, and in there sits your biceps tendon, your rotator cuff tendon, which is a couple of tendons together, and then a bursa. There's not much space. So whenever you lift your arm, typically forward, as you might be doing when you're handling a package, that bursa and those tendons kind of get squashed in that space. So if you're doing that repetitively and you're asking those muscles to contract at the same time to lift something, it really sets them up for an injury. So the treatment for that would be, first of all, trying to modify how you do your work so you're not stressing your shoulder all day long. And you can think about if there's any way to do that. Secondly, continue with the icing. And then third is to increase the strength of the rotator cuff itself so it can handle the kinds of loads you're placing on it during your daily activities. So a specific rotator cuff strengthening program would probably be in order. Also, some stretching for some of the other soft tissues around the area to maintain mobility so you can maintain that space and make sure there's sufficient space for all those soft tissues. So a trip or two to a physical therapist can help direct you in the right exercises for that. They can talk to you about lifting techniques or things to do to decrease the stress on those tissues. But given that this is your vocation, this is what you do day in and day out, you need to get it handled. If it was going to get better on its own, it'd be better by now. It's been a month. So it's better to get a handle on this now.
Okay. What about an occupational therapist?
An occupational therapist might be able to help. They tend to focus more distally on hand function and daily functional activities, okay. Dressing, self-management.
Okay.
There may be occupational therapists or physical therapists who work in an area called work hardening, where they specialize in work-related injuries. So an occupational therapist who works in that area may be helpful.
Or better, maybe a physical therapist in this instance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for calling, John. Jeannie in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I actually am calling about knee pain. Mm-hmm. I started to run last November, and I slowly built up. It's more of a jog, to be honest, and I got to about 3 miles. And then this April, one day I was running, and I run on a treadmill, and I was probably 23 minutes in or so, and I started to get pain in my left knee. Now, I'm new at this, and I did what I shouldn't have done, and I tried to run through it. About 3 minutes in, I realized that wasn't a good idea, and I stopped running. That night, I had pain in my left knee when I walked downstairs. I went to my doctor a few days later, but by that point, there wasn't any pain.
Mm-hmm.
He suggested that I ease off, I get back into walking, see if I can tolerate that, and then work back up to running. I took about 2 weeks off. I ran, and I was fine. And then when I tried to run the next time, I had pain, so I took 2 weeks off again. And I'm kind of going back and forth here. I just last week was able to run without pain. But I don't know, is this a tendonitis kind of overuse thing, or is this something that I should go and have checked out?
What part of your knee hurts?
I would say the outside and maybe slightly below the kneecap.
Okay. It's probably fairly classic patellofemoral pain or iliotibial band syndrome or a combination of both. On the outside of your knee, it tends to be your iliotibial band, but there's also slips of tissue that go from your iliotibial band to underneath your kneecap and can impact front of the knee pain called patellofemoral pain. Probably one of the most common knee problems we see in runners is patellofemoral pain, particularly in women because of the anatomical structure of our hips and legs and the typical pattern of strength. So a visit or two to a physical therapist can really help you with this, giving you specific stretching exercises for the muscles probably on the outside of your hip and the back of your thigh and your quadriceps muscles, as well as strengthening exercises for your quadriceps muscles and around your hip. There's a lot of new research showing the importance of hip strength in decreasing kneecap pain, but also looking at your posture to see if there are underlying issues as to why you're getting pain in one knee, because one would think that if you were running, you would have the same pain in both knees. So there's something about that left leg that's different than your right leg. And boy, if we could figure that out, that might help.
My hips don't sit level.
Okay.
Could that be it?
That could very well be it.
There's a slight leg difference, which I was told wasn't worth treating.
Okay.
But could that be causing the pain in my left?
It certainly could be. It may be that it's not worth treating at a lower activity level, but once you get up to a higher activity level, it starts to become significant.
Okay. So a physical therapist could evaluate my form and possibly
absolutely.
Give me suggestions.
You bet.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You betcha.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Dorothy in McGuanago, you are up. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to offer a word of encouragement to the gentleman who called about his wife's spinal stenosis.
Mm-hmm.
I had this very same condition with spondylolisthesis and a bulging disc. Mm-hmm. I saw a neurosurgeon who offered me nothing. I went to someone else for a second opinion. After I had physical therapy and epidural cortisone, I had surgery last October. October, and I have not had 1 minute of pain after that.
Good. Oh,
beautiful, beautiful.
Fantastic.
So, Dorothy, how quickly did you get relief after the surgery?
I had immediate relief.
Yeah.
Mm. I never had any pain after surgery.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's
great.
Fantastic. You know, part of it depends on how irritated the nerve roots are when they go in and take the pressure off them. And obviously, what you described is what everybody wants to have. And it's not like that was the right combination for you.
Thank you.
And I would encourage people to get a second opinion whenever there's a major problem like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It never hurts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dorothy. Yep.
You're welcome.
Thanks
Appreciate
for calling.
The call. And another Dorothy, this one in Racine is up next. Hi, Dorothy.
Good morning.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Okay, about 3 months ago, I had a total knee replacement in my right knee. And after about a month of recuperation, I got a stress fracture in that knee. So I had to have one of those soft casts from the ankle to the thigh to wear 24 hours a day for a month and stay off the leg as much as possible, which was hard, but I tried. Well, anyway, that's come off. But my problem right now is I have a terrible pain in the groin area of that leg, and the pain radiates down the front of my leg. Now, tomorrow I have to go in and have a cortisone shot in that area because the x-ray showed a lot of arthritis. So I don't know. I was going for therapy. They were putting deep heat on it. Is this the right way to go, or I'm confused now. Am I doing the right thing?
Where are they injecting the cortisone?
Well, I imagine somewhere around that groin area.
Hmm.
I have to go to radiology, you know, for the radiologist to do it.
Okay. Well, you said that there's a lot of arthritis in the area, so I doubt that they're going to inject in your groin area. They're going to either injoin into your hip joint, or
maybe.
I would guess maybe into your back would be my guess.
Oh, okay.
If you're having pain in your groin and down the front of your thigh, what kind of studies did they do to assess this pain? You said you had a lot of arthritis. Did they take X-rays?
X-rays,
did they do an
MRI? Yes.
What did they X-ray?
That area.
Just your
hip? First, he thought maybe I had a slight fracture in the hip.
Okay.
But it showed just mostly arthritis at this time.
Okay. So they're going to do an injection in your hip. Well, it'll help certainly be diagnostic, and that if they inject that area and you have relief of your pain, then you know that's the source of your pain.
Uh-huh.
If they do the injection and you're still having that pain, then you need to let them know that, and they need to continue to investigate to find the source of your pain, because
right.
it could be coming from your back or elsewhere.
Right.
Well, he said I have a lot of arthritis in the back, and I do know I have a couple ruptured discs in the back.
Right.
So I'm kind of dealing with multiple things.
Yeah, well, it makes sense to take things one step at a time. They can start by eliminating the hip as the contributor, but again, it's important not to stop there if your symptoms don't resolve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
Is it good to put the heat or the cold at this point?
Whatever feels most comfortable to you.
Oh, okay.
And it
All
sounds
right.
like, Dorothy, I don't know if you have access to it or not, but it sounds like a good place where you might be able to exercise is in the pool. If you're having that much pain with weight bearing, you know, standing, walking, that may be the place where you can do the most exercise without flaring things up in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Sean in West Salem, we're on to you now. Hi, Sean.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call today, guys.
Sure.
So I am a trainer. So I'm like basically adult education. I'm on my feet a lot. Here in the past, I'd say over the past 2 months, on my left foot, it feels like I've got like a really bad bruise on the outside of it, but then I end up getting some cramps and other things in the middle or the ball of my foot, and it's just really, it's really, really, really painful to walk on it sometimes. Normally, right away in the morning or... which then gets better, but then closer to the end of the day, it just starts getting, you know, worse and worse and worse. The pain isn't going away. I have no idea what's going on. My uncle, who is a medic in the Air Force, says to just ice it, but, you know, I don't know what to do from here.
So this is the outside of your foot?
Yes, the most pain is coming from, like, the outside of my foot, like, really from where the last knuckle of the pinky toe is all the way through my heel.
Okay. Have you had this evaluated by anyone other than your uncle?
No, I haven't, no.
Okay. Given that it's been 2 months and you're on your feet all day, I would go in and see your physician and have it evaluated.
Okay.
Again, the first thing that comes into my head with that kind of symptom history in that location is a stress fracture of your fifth metatarsal.
Okay.
So I'd get it checked out. It's not a common place to have typical muscle or soft tissue pain. So I'd have it checked out. And once you find the source of the problem and get a more definitive diagnosis, then you can figure out what the best practitioner is to see. But I think you need to start out with a physician at this point.
Okay. Just have them basically take a picture of it and go from there?
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Tom in Escanaba, Michigan. Hello.
Yes. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I drive semi and have poor circulation in both my legs and in my left foot, the outside. Well, even with the lower parts of the cast of my legs, they're turning dark, kind of purple.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the left foot on the outside, and then if I kind of stretch it out, then it hurts the foot part. I was just trying to get a clue on what I should do.
Tommy, have you seen a physician for this, that they've looked at your feet?
I've went to different doctors for different things and had them look at them, but lately it's been getting worse. They really don't say much.
Okay.
You know.
You know, poor circulation is not an uncommon problem, but if you're starting to get changes in skin, you know, the skin color change you're describing, you know, that implies that the circulatory problem may be getting worse. You don't want to start developing open wounds or sores down by your feet, because then you have a really hard time healing. So I don't know when the last time you saw your medical doctor was, but if it was more than a couple of months ago, I would go back in again, and if need be, if you can time it so you either sit or you drive for a while, so when you come in, your feet look the way they look when you're driving. That may help the physician sort out, you know, how severe is the problem and what problem is it.
Okay, yeah. Now I see like a foot specialist or just the regular doctor?
You know, if you have an internist or a general practice or a family practice physician, that would be a good place to go. If you've seen a vascular physician in the past, then that's where I would go. But I probably would not go to a podiatrist for this. I would go to, like I said, a vascular physician if you have one, or your primary care physician.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks, Tom. Good luck.
Good luck, Tom.
Appreciate the call. And let's go to Kent in Milwaukee. Hi, Kent.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I have, I've been suffering from piriformis syndrome for about 6 months now. And I was just wondering, what is the prognosis as far as trying to alleviate the pain that I've been experiencing? It seems very difficult to stretch these muscles.
Okay, what is that, by the way, Bill?
Well, the piriformis is a muscle that's deep in the buttock area. It's one of the rotators around the hip. And it's kind of in the area where our sit bones are. You know, when we're sitting and there's two bones, we tend to put pressure on. Also, through that area comes the sciatic nerve. So there's a very close anatomical relationship between this muscle and the sciatic nerve. And there's a percentage of people where part of the sciatic nerve actually goes through the muscle belly itself. And so if that muscle's tight or the muscle goes in spasm, it can potentially cause some sciatic type of presentation. Kent, are you having thigh and calf symptoms with this, or is it all up in the
bottom? Absolutely, yeah. My sciatic is definitely being affected, and it's very bad in the morning when I first stand up out of bed.
Okay, and have they looked at your lumbar area to make sure that the problem's not up in the lumbar region?
Yeah, I've had some chiropractic treatments, and everything seems to be in alignment.
Okay,
and I also swim regularly, and that doesn't seem to
help or hurt the situation.
Yeah, I would think swimming would be okay. I think you'd get into more trouble if you were running, climbing, biking, as opposed to swimming. So I would not stop that. There's times when a nerve is irritated, nerve tissue does not like to be stretched very aggressively at all. And so it's worth trying to stretch the hip out initially, but there's times it can actually flare things up. And so it's best to leave that buttock area alone and leave your hamstrings alone and don't stretch.
Okay.
And what should happen over some time is that you should end up feeling a little stiffer, but there should be less pain intensity. That would be a good sequence. You want to make sure that you're stretching actually the front of your thigh, your quadriceps and the front of that hip to take some pressure off the piriformis, and then doing some strengthening around that area as well. But you know, nerve tissue does not like to be stretched much at all, and it can be overdone and actually end up causing, you know, preventing things from healing and recovering.
Okay, I've done a little research on some acupuncture treatment, and I'm looking into pursuing that. Can you provide just an opinion on that?
Yeah, I can't give you specifically with the piriformis syndrome, but I do know that I've had patients with some chronic and other people with acute back pain who've gone to acupuncturists and have gotten good relief. So I think as long as you go to someone who's licensed, again, I would expect that within 6 to 8 visits, you should be noticing a difference. If it does help, what the acupuncture treatment should do is open the windows for you then to exercise a little more aggressively.
Okay.
It's similar to how I'd view an injection. If it can help quiet things down, then that should open some doors from a rehab standpoint.
Okay.
But that's you work out with the acupuncturist if you decide to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But if you're stretching your hamstrings and stretching that buttock region at this stage, I would back off on that and actually stretch the front of your thigh and, you know, whatever you're strengthening you've been given related to your back and your hips, keep doing that. But swimming, I would keep up with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And Jim in Sockville, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi there.
What's up with you?
I had a rotator cuff injury, a pretty bad tear, and then last summer I had the doctor said, well, let's try physical therapy first, which I had, and I got some of the strength and motion back, but that arm is still very weak. But when I went to the physical therapist, she said, you know, if I were you, if you don't have any real pain, I would just kind of live with it rather than go through the surgery. And I'm just wondering what your opinion is. Can it get worse, or you damage it more by not having the surgery? Or
mm-hmm. Let me ask a couple quick questions. How old are you?
70.
And is it your dominant arm?
Yes. And okay. I kind of play bad tennis with it.
Okay.
And I know one of the earlier gentlemen was saying swimming, for instance.
Yeah.
I can't do a crawl stroke with of that.
Right. Okay. Well, here's the deal. At age 70, you're not going to be able to repair the rotator cuff tendon. There's not going to be enough high quality tissue to repair the tendon. So then your default surgery is a decompression where they make more room for what remains of your rotator cuff tendon. But the reason to do a decompression is that you have pain. So I think the physical therapist was right in that if you're not having pain, there really aren't surgical options for you. If you were 32 and you had an acute tear of your rotator cuff where you fell, you had a healthy rotator cuff, you popped it off, they could come in and fix it and suture it back down. But at 70, chances are your rotator cuff tear was developing over many years. Something was the straw that broke the camel's back, and there's not enough quality tissue to have an effective repair. You'd probably end up with a loss of motion, probably no better motion than you have now, and no better strength.
So not something to consider the way it sounds. And we will consider, though, Lori and Bill coming back in about a month, I hope.
We'll do that.
We'll do.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Lori Tyne-Brody, Senior Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor in Physical Therapy at the UW Medical School. They will be back, and we'll do it again with them. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at searching for affordable airfares with Rick Seney of FareCompare.com. And then Jim Rabbit talks about contractors and repair crews. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.